The following program is a recorded broadcast. Please do not attempt to call the program. Phone lines are not open.
Technology has always presented a challenge, a general challenge, as we invent new things and new ways of doing old things. We have a whole new set of questions we need to answer. And I'm sure that in the past, as technology has advanced, I'm not just talking about the 20th century, I'm talking about before that as well, as technology has advanced, it's also raised moral and ethical questions as well. But it seems more so in an age that is so dependent on technology, that is so tied into technology, especially in an information age where we depend, and I mean depend, upon, well, the power staying on for us to know what's going on in the world, to communicate with one another, to get around. It would seem that that kind of immersion in technology, especially in an information age, is going to raise all sorts of ethical questions and moral questions, especially for the Christian who considers himself a stranger in this world and a citizen of heaven. We're going to talk about Christians in a high-tech culture during this hour of Issues, Etc. You can join us. Our phone number, 1-800-730-2727. I'm Todd Wilkin. Our guest is Dr. Quentin Schultz. He's a professor of communication arts and sciences at Calvin College in Grand Rapids, Michigan, author of a new book. It's titled Habits of the High-Tech Heart, Living Virtuously in an Information Age. Dr. Schultz, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hey, listen, Todd, can you call back later? I got to catch up on my email.
No thanks. No thanks.
And wait a minute. There's a TV show on channel 285 that I want to watch.
You have no idea how many times I have done interviews. I mean, this has been years now. I've done interviews with people, great guests, and I can hear their computer bebopping in the back. I can hear the email coming and that little sound that it makes.
Yeah, I have the sound turned off because I don't even want it bothering me.
I can hear clicking of keyboards, and I can hear telephones and faxes in the background as well. Luckily, most of them are not terribly distracted by such things.
Well, here's a great story for you. I was with a friend who's a pastor in Maine over the weekend, and I asked him about technology in his congregation, and he said a couple of months ago, right in the middle of his sermon, somebody's cell phone went off in the second row, and then it went a second time, and everybody's looking around, and finally the guy recognizes it's his phone, and what do you think he does?
He answers it and talks.
He answers it and starts talking in the second row of the church right during the sermon. My pastor friend said he didn't know what to do. Should we stop and wait for the guy to finish his conversation? It's a small church, 125 people, and disrupted the whole thing, but the guy went ahead anyway.
Well, maybe we're coming to a time when people will be checking their email via the text on their cell phones right in the middle of the sermon, too, just to make sure they don't miss anything.
Yet. Oh, here's another one. I spoke to a group of technologists, Christians who are in technology, last September in Chicago. And it was in a ballroom of a hotel. And as I looked out over the group, I noticed that about a third of them had their computers on. This particular ballroom, because it was a technology conference, had wireless connectivity. And so they're doing email. Yeah, they got their computers up and they're rattling away about a third of the audience while I'm talking. So finally, and I was talking on the subject of this book, Habits of the High-Tech Heart, and finally I said, you are demonstrating to me the problem. There's not enough virtue here that you would even listen to the speaker. About a third of you think it's more important to be doing your email. I said, if that's the way you feel about it, then the third of you ought to just leave the room. That's okay with me. Do your email somewhere else. Well, I thought that was the end of it. I probably shouldn't have been so direct, but it so happened that one of my former students was in the audience. And I had to leave for the airport immediately after I was done speaking, but he stayed around, and in the next section, he happened to sit somewhere where there was a note that somebody had written during my session previously and passed it down the aisle for everybody to see. And the note said, essentially, does this guy think we ought to stop eating while he speaks, too?
Oh, my goodness.
So this is the problem. These are all examples. But the problem is that we're all becoming like machines. We're treating each other like machines. And we're losing the basic human virtue that we need to be good people in relationship with God and with each other. And it's just going right out the window with all these wonderful technologies.
You start your book by talking about what you call a techno-moral crisis.
Yeah.
Is that just a part of it, or is it bigger even than just the fact that we've become incredibly rude?
Well, I think the rudeness is it's out there. It's a lack of civility. You see it especially on email with people ranting with other people and all. But I think it's part of this change where the culture, the way of life of people within the technological society is changing. The assumed social mores, the values and the beliefs and all that we have are shifting in a technological direction where we feel like we have the right to treat other people as its and to manipulate other people, to ignore other people, to yell at other people as if they don't have feelings. The rudeness, I think, is part of this technologizing of the culture.
My experience with this comes from interaction with listeners very often after a program. You know, we talk about a lot of issues here, and some of them leave people a little upset or disturbed. And I'll receive emails from people. I had an experience about 2 years ago. It really was eye-opening, since we're telling stories. I had a week where I got nasty email after nasty email, and they were nasty. They were mean. They were personal. And usually they are. The nicest email I got that week was so civil and so polite from a listener who completely disagreed with me. He was an atheist. The rest of them were all from Christians. And
how
I found
that
to be pretty typical, actually. Christians think they can say just about anything as long as they're typing it into their keyboards.
Yeah, there, particularly with email, there's something where many people will say something in email that they won't say to the same person in person. And that's one of the phenomena of this technologizing of our culture that we have to be aware of. We think we're getting closer to everybody because these are, after all, communication media. But in fact, they can distance us from each other and make us less sensitive and less observant. And as I say in the book in Chapter 3, I think the biggest problem is that we're losing our ability to listen to one another, to really listen. And all that's meant in that, to empathize, to sympathize, to, you know, listening, if you go back and look at the derivation of the word, it comes from the idea of being obedient, making ourselves obedient to another. And it's that kind of obedience, attentiveness, that's disappearing. I hear about this all the time from pastors, for example, who say to me that they believe over the last 10 years the members of their congregations have found it more and more difficult to listen. And I think that's true. And as a teacher, I see the same phenomenon.
If people were asked about the Internet, about the information superhighway, as it used to be called, that sounds so trite, doesn't it? Sounds so quaint. But people are asked about this. They say, what's the biggest danger out there? A lot of people will say, well, it's the pornography, or it's just the junk, or it's the spam email, or it's the misinformation. What do you think the biggest danger of this technology really is?
Well, it's a tough one, Todd, because as you suggest, there are a lot of different ways of going at that. But I think the biggest danger is a growing lack of attentiveness to the moral and spiritual dimensions of our lives. And I would put that ahead of the pornography issue and all, too, which I see as the pornography thing sort of resulting from that. People who live virtuously and have cultivated self-restraint and so on are less likely to have problems with that kind of content. But where we're living with this unbridled online individualism, where, you know, we see progress as the individual being able to get on and communicate with anybody, download any kind of material, that sort of progress, there's no room for morality or spirituality in that kind of worldview. And so what I'm finding is that a growing number of people, including Christians, are saying to me that they feel their lives are so chaotic and fragmented and broken up, rushing from one thing to another, and technology making it worse, that they don't feel like they can live with integrity, with a sort of gospel at the center of their lives anymore, or even with time for prayer. And that blows me away. That absolutely blows me away because, of course, we're celebrating these new technologies as communication technologies, and then people start telling me that they don't have any time to communicate with God, let alone hardly anybody else.
You talk about the fragmentation that this technology has brought. I wonder also about the trivialization of our lives. We suddenly, our brains are filled with all sorts of trivial bits of information that, like, just like our brains become like the internet. You go there and there's 1,000 things coming at you at once and pop-up advertisements, and we can hardly sort the important from the unimportant or the real from the unreal.
Exactly. Chapter 1, I talk about discernment, the importance of discernment, sort of finding out where we're really located here in this culture, getting oriented, if you will. And I think discernment is a huge issue, and discerning the garbage from the good, the trivial from the significant, all that stuff is very, very difficult. And we want to tend to ourselves that it's simply the growth of the amount of information available that's good, without bringing in enough discernment to look at it and say, well, what percentage of this stuff has any real merit or value to it? I think in the late 90s, when the high-tech gurus, the celebrities, were running around the country getting $20,000 at a speech telling us how this high-bandwidth new technology economy was going to make everything better because everybody would have access to anything they wanted 24 hours a day, I think we never challenged that. We never said, wait a minute, what is all that stuff that we're going to have available to us? You know, is it going to be mostly trivial stuff that sort of just burns up our time? I think the technology, the precursor to this was really television, much more than radio. Television became a medium of entertainment in the sense of relieving people from boredom, just giving them anything, and not really much attuned to the quality of what it was providing. And televisions continued to be that way for many, many people, just a way of relieving boredom with trivial stuff. And so cyberspace comes along, and what we do now when we go to web surfing is bring the same kind of attitude toward it that we bring towards TV. I just want to be entertained. I just want to, you know, have my mind taken off of some bad things happening in my life, or to give me something to do so I don't have to confront my spouse or a child that I've got a problem with. And so it's a whole culture of diversion that's part of this, and it's diverting us from what's really significant, real, and important.
Dr. Quentin Schultz is our guest. We're talking about Christians in a high-tech culture. When we come back, I'm sure that our guest is familiar with Neil Postman. He's written this great book some years ago. It's longer ago than I'm willing to admit, actually, called Amusing Ourselves to Death. He just mentioned the connection between television and our attitude today. Maybe the two are natural. Maybe the technological age that we're living in is a natural outgrowth. What we expect from our information, from our relationships, maybe it has been more shaped by an entertainment culture, a culture that constantly changes and talks in sound bites. We'll talk about that when we come back. Our phone number, 1-800-730-2727. Stay with us.
You're listening to Issues Etc. on the Jubilee Network.
Can God's ways be generally understood by human reason? Is God's favor manifested in life's successes and victories? Is God pleased by sincere human effort? Hi, this is Todd Wilkin, host of Issues Etc. You'll find answers to these questions in the latest edition of the Issues Etc. Journal. I've written an article titled, The Theology of the Cross, Cross-Shaped Theology. The latest issue also contains articles titled The Means of Grace, A Confident and Joyful Heart by Pastor Eric Rotman, Living in Two Kingdoms, Peace or War, Order or Chaos by Pastor Mark Sell, and Craig Parton's essay From Evangelicalism to the Evangel. Plus, you'll find a list of tape and book resources. You can receive a complimentary copy of the Issues Etc. Journal by calling our resource line at 1-800-737-0172 or write Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Quentin Schultz is our guest, author of the book, Habits of the High-Tech Heart, Living Virtuously in an Information Age. If you have a question or a comment, our phone number is 1-800-730-2727. That's 1-800-730-2727. Dr. Schultz, I mentioned before the break Neil Postman's book, Amusing Ourselves to Death. He makes a point in that book, and he's really prophetic in this book, because I don't think he was really writing when the Internet was underway. He says that the way we know things now is different. We think we've seen an event when we've watched it on television, but what we've actually seen is a carefully edited film or version of the event, perspective of the event. You talk about promiscuous knowing as a result of the high-tech world we live in. What do you mean by that?
Well, thanks for asking that question, because I think that's one of the keys to understanding our current situation and working our ways out. How do we know? Knowing means really intimacy. You know, in the scriptures, we think about knowing in the deepest sense, having intimate relations with another person. And so let me give you an example of real knowing. A year ago, I took a year off to work on this in another book, and we moved out of state down to Florida for the year, and we had a little condominium on an inland lake, very small lake, but quite a bit of wildlife there. There was a great blue heron and egrets. It was really quite an interesting time, because never in my life have I lived in a natural area like that where I had enough time during the day to pay attention to what was happening. And so as I worked most of that year outdoors in a little area we had out back, I could see the wildlife, pay attention, and I began to get to know individual creatures. I could tell which bird it was that was calling or flying by. Even made friends with a great blue heron. It didn't have a mate and was apparently lonely and would come over and stand there about 3 or 4 feet away from me much of the day. Really interesting time. There was one alligator there, too. But my wife and I got to know the inhabitants of this area, and we could tell by the calls when something was wrong, and a couple of times saw some terrible things happen, including an alligator get a large bird right out of the water. It was an amazing thing. But it occurred to me during that year that I had never really taken enough time to get to know nature that well and to appreciate it. Thank God for this incredible variety and beauty. And so I had, in that getting to know something, I began to develop a little bit of wisdom as well about nature, how nature works. Well, this is entirely the opposite of the way most of our knowing takes place in a high-tech society. Most of our knowing is little bits and pieces of information from here and from there. The latest stock quote, the baseball scores, a quick visit to some website to get some information, or a glance through the newspaper, maybe a few minutes of watching TV news or something. It's very promiscuous. We don't get to know anything very well. Instead, we hop from one subject to another. And the same thing happens in our relationships with people. Instead of really getting to know individual persons very well, so well that we can love them, you can't love somebody that you don't know well, because it's only in knowing them as a particular person with particular needs and desires and hurts and dreams and so on that you can love them. And so our knowing is becoming increasingly promiscuous without any depth, broken up, fragmented among many different relationships and many different media, many different messages. So that's part of the irony, Todd, of the communication age or information age, that we think we're communicating better and getting better informed, but it's really just a lot of bits and pieces.
You said you can't love what you don't know, or you can't love whom you don't know. I had a seminary professor who always said, you cannot understand anything you don't know. And what he meant was, you have to sit down and do the hard work of learning something, learning the facts, the figures, memorizing things. I think he was talking about learning languages. And he said, you can't understand what you don't know. And yet it seems to me, picking up on what you just said, that we are satisfied nowadays in our high-tech information age to know just enough to get us by, just enough to get us to the next day, without truly understanding, say, a news story, what's behind it, We're happy just to have, in fact, the shorter the better. If you can give it to me in less than a sentence or bullet points, that's the best.
I think you're exactly right. News, it's so obvious. Our understanding of what's going on in the hot spots in the world tends to be very superficial. We get the latest body counts, the latest bombs, the latest threats, etc. But having any real wisdom about what's going on is impossible because we're not familiar enough with it. There's a history there. There are different people involved. There are different claims that people have made that have led to conflicts and so on.
But don't we want to say, and I'm sorry to interrupt, isn't it more than just saying, don't tell me more than I need to know? Isn't it anything more than I need to know is a waste of my time? Anything more than just to get me by to the next second is a waste of my time.
Right, right. And that reflects a kind of impatience and also a kind of selfish individualism, both of which I think are rampant in this cyber culture of ours and getting more and more so. We don't have time for other people unless they have something of value for us. And if they do, we want it now. This is getting so deep in our culture, but like fish in the water, we don't see it. And it's one of the reasons for a declining civility in society, too, with people increasingly getting unglued about other people and saying or doing things that they shouldn't. So there is a strong connection between the over-technologizing of our lives and this kind of slippage into individualism and selfishness with no desire to get to know anyone or anything well enough that we can really appreciate it and be thankful for it. You know, in the history of the church, there is the idea of contemplation. And I know it's virtually gone now, but I'd just like to say a couple of things about it. It's this idea that we can become much more grateful to God by contemplating God's world, by thinking about it and enjoying it, the beauty of it, and of human life, the things that we've been granted. I mean, none of this we really created ourselves. We only inherited it as a gift from God. But instead, we don't take the time for that. I think worship, by the way, is part of that. Worship is part of re-expressing our gratitude to God for what God has done. But instead of taking any time for such spiritual contemplation and gratitude, we just plow ahead. Me, 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 now, now, now. I want more, more, more. And that's becoming life in the technological age.
One thing I want to talk about when we come back from this break is what you call the dangers of unbridled bandwidth. And it sounds like a technical term, but I think you're making more of it than just the dangers of getting too much information too fast. Dr. Quentin Schultz is our guest. He's professor of communications, arts, and sciences at Calvin College in Grand Rapids, Michigan. The new book that he has written is called Habits of the High-Tech Heart, Living Virtuously in the Information Age. And we're talking about Christians in a high-tech culture. Now, it's a great thing to spend this time diagnosing the problem. And maybe we put our finger on something that you, the listener, have said, okay, now this has been bugging me and needling at me. Something that's wrong with my life since I've been swallowed up in an information age. If you'd like to give us a call, we have a phone number, 1-800-730-2727. But more importantly, what's the solution to this?
You're listening to Issues Etc. on the Jubilee Network.
What do we know about Dietrich Bonhoeffer other than his failed attempt to assassinate Adolf Hitler? What can we learn today from the life and times of this German theologian of the early 20th century? You'll find answers to these questions with the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July, Till the Night Be Past. The book is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040. Or you can find out more about this book on our website, issuesetc.org, and click the What's New section. Till the Night Be Past is a biography of Dietrich Bonhoeffer written by the late Theodor Kleinhans. In this book, you'll find out what motivated Bonhoeffer's classic writings, Life Together and the Cost of Discipleship. This book is available for $15.99 plus shipping and handling. Till the Night Be Past, our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July. For more information, call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040.
This is Family News in Focus. I'm Bob Dittmer. Ohio's obscenity law is under attack by a lawyer that specializes in defending adult bookstores. Lou Serkin is asking a Cincinnati judge to overturn the law, claiming that practically all choices made by adults regarding their sexual practices should be beyond the state's control. Steve Jordahl reports this suit was predicted just 3 weeks ago.
The case involves the sale of a video so explicit some members of the jury had to avert their eyes. Defense attorney Serkin, who often defends Larry Flint of Hustler magazine, says there should be few restrictions on such material.
You have a right, you know, sexually explicit material to be possessed. It's a corollary right in order to be able to, for someone to be able to sell it to you.
Serkin says the Supreme Court ruling overturning laws against sodomy in Texas opens the door to his challenge.
It does now bring into question obscenity laws, prostitution laws, and such things as that. Legislative bodies are not to legislate morality.
This is exactly the kind of litigation Justice Antonin Scalia warned was coming in his dissent of the Supreme Court ruling. David Miller of Citizens for Community Values says it came a lot sooner than expected.
I think everyone was seeing this much further down the road, but here we are 3 weeks later, and the Hustler magazine attorney, Lou Serkin, is the one that's going first after this law. They are trying to say that there is an unlimited right to conduct for any transaction we desire. That's actually called anarchy, and it's suicidal for our nation.
The judge has decided to delay his ruling on the motion until later in the trial. For Family News in Focus, I'm Steve Jordahl.
Serkin's request was made during the trial of Sean Jenkins, who was charged with pandering obscenity from his adult bookstore. An undercover officer bought an obscene videotape at that business. For Family News in Focus, I'm Bob Dittmer.
Sign on at 6:30 tomorrow morning. Wake up with inspiration, information, and a little fun on a Friday. Hi, this is Paul Clayton. Our chief meteorologist, Larry Carter, returns. We'll hear words of inspiration from Marty Linfett. We'll also hear commentary from Dr. Dale Meyer. We will give you the answer to the AME 50 KFUO Daily Bible Quiz and play your inspirational Christian favorites on the morning show Friday on AM 850 KFUO.
What motivated Dietrich Bonhoeffer's classic writings, The Cost of Discipleship and Life Together? Find out with a book, Till the Night Be Past, published by Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Till the Night Be Past is a biography of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, 1-800-325-3040. You can find out more about this book on the internet, issuesetc.org, and click What's New. Till the Night Be Past, our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July, 1-800-325-3040. The following program is a recorded broadcast. Please do not attempt to call the program. Phone lines are not open.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin, our guest, Dr. Quentin Schultz. You can purchase Dr. Quentin Schultz's book called Habits of the High-Tech Heart, Living Virtuously in the Information Age, directly through our radio program. We'll send you the book for a contribution of $23 to Issues Etc. The price includes shipping and handling. If you order it from the publisher, it's going to cost you around $27. If you purchase the book at your local Christian bookstore, they'll probably charge you about $25. But we'll send you Habits of the High-Tech Heart for only $23. Have your MasterCard, your Visa, or your Discover card ready. And call our resource line. It's 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. The book is called Habits of the High-Tech Heart by Dr. Quentin Schultz. Or you can make a $23 check payable and mail it to us at Issues Etc., Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. That's Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. The phone number again, 1-800-737-0172. Dr. Schultz, you write about unbridled bandwidth, and I think you're making more than just a statement about the technology itself. What do you mean about the dangers of unbridled bandwidth?
Well, let's first see what we mean about bandwidth. I don't want anybody to get confused.
Sure.
Bandwidth is just a very simple thing. It's the amount of information of some kind that you can get from one place to another in an amount of time. The more bandwidth, the more information. Think of it almost like water. You know, how big is your hose? And, you know, you get connected to the Internet with a little modem, 56K modem, let's say, through your phone line, it only works so fast. You only get so much information. It may take a minute to download a particular web page. Well, you increase the bandwidth a little bit. You go up to cable modem, see, so you're connected through your cable TV system. Now maybe you're 10 times faster, and so it takes only five seconds to get the page, or 10 seconds. Or now you can get audio and video files and everything else. And what we've heard throughout the 1990s and into this decade now is the idea that society is going to be better, and our individual lives are going to be better. We're going to be happier people if we just get more bandwidth, if we can just get more information from one place to another faster. And so that's sort of been the ideal that's really pushing a lot of the high-tech cyber development. And I just wanted to point out to people in Chapter 2 in the book that this whole desire for this unlimited bandwidth, just to see if we can get to the point where anybody can have anything they want as fast as they want it, is pure folly. This cannot in and of itself be anything like progress. It can't contribute to our happiness in and of itself. In fact, what tends to happen is we have so much going on as our bandwidth increases. You know, you get a cell phone, you got some additional bandwidth. You got a fax machine, you got more bandwidth. You get a cable modem for your internet connection. You get satellite TV with 300 channels instead of a measly 70 channels on local cable or whatever. And all this bandwidth increases. It doesn't necessarily make our lives any better. Most people that I talk with today who are quickly increasing their access to more information are telling me that it's actually having a negative effect. Look at this, my cell phone going off here, right in the middle of this. See? So what am I going to do? I'm going to turn it off.
It's a great illustration.
It's a great illustration. And so things begin interrupting other things. And pretty soon our lives don't have any coherence or balance. And we don't have a integrity. And integrity really means a kind of center to our lives that holds everything else together, like faith in God. And it's gotten to the point where a lot of people I talk with now tell me that at work alone, the bandwidth is out of control, and they're getting so many messages with so many demands and questions and forms to fill out from so many different people at work that they can't do their job. It's the tyranny of the urgent, the latest email coming in that has to be answered. And I think we're reaching a point in the next couple of years here where we're going to see people rejecting this. And they're going to say, I don't want greater bandwidth. Take the cell phone back. Take the cable modem back. They want some peace and quiet so they can get some meaning and coherence in their lives.
When will fast enough ever be fast enough? Or will it?
Well, I'm not a prophet at all, Todd, but let me just lay out the near future here so we can kind of answer that question in this context. We're moving toward a situation where practically any kind of messages that we want we'll be able to get through some type of computer. So that if you want a television program, let's say it was a program that was on yesterday, already. It's on a computer somewhere stored. And whatever the technology is that we use, we can get immediate access to that program now and get it piped through this bandwidth right into our house. Same thing with newspapers, with magazines, with sports information, with radar, everything. Anything, pornography. So that imagine a huge menu out there of every kind of message and information imaginable. And with the click of a mouse, you've got it. So it's a sort of a menu-driven world, the click of a mouse. That's the reality of where we're moving to. You know this even with your show and with many other radio shows now that are on the Internet or stored on files so that people can click on them and listen to them later. Now, in that scenario, I think what we have to say is if we can get just about anything we want on the click of a mouse, we don't need any greater speed. We've reached a limit. We could say there's maybe certain kinds of things online that are not online that we would like online or not stored in that menu yet. There will always be such things that aren't quite there yet, and we might complain about that. But in terms of speed, that's no longer the issue. And as we move toward that kind of scenario, which is coming, I think then we have to say what is really crucial is discernment, being able to decide from among all this stuff out there what's worth pumping into our homes and into our lives and our brains and our hearts and all, and what is not. It becomes a huge issue. And what's fascinating to me is if you take education as an example, I teach at the college level at Calvin College, but it's the same thing for people who are teaching in high school or primary educators. We're putting all this technology to connect students to these databases out there, these menus, and we're investing almost nothing in helping the teachers teach discernment about what of this stuff is worth getting access to and what is not. And so we've got students writing papers in courses now, doing all the information online, pulling information from all kinds of different sources that they can't really evaluate. They don't know if it's accurate or not, or good or bad, or if it's from a particular perspective. It's a huge discernment nightmare produced by having more and more stuff available on demand.
Let's take a phone call. Jonathan is calling. I think he wants to speak to that very issue, in fact. Jonathan, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi, thanks. Yeah, it is kind of to that issue. It's ironic you were talking about that. I taught high school for a year in Los Angeles, and it got me thinking about something. Classical education, you know, 50 years ago, seemed to focus on several basic subjects, and you would spend most of the day, you know, with reading, writing, arithmetic. And now we've moved more and more, at least in California, to the point where we have so many different subjects available that you never really learn any of them. You spend, half an hour a day on typing, and then that's only for half of a semester out of your entire 4 years in high school. And it's gotten to that point where we want to teach our children so much that they really don't learn anything. And I think that's been going on for a long time, almost maybe before some of the things you're talking about have really seemed apparent. It seemed to start somewhere in the 60s, I would think. But I'm too young to really make that statement, I guess.
Jonathan, thank you very much. Dr. Schultz, your reaction?
Well, I think Jonathan's right on target. The problems I'm talking about in the book with the cyber technologies and all do have their roots in earlier things that have taken place in different schools and other social institutions, the family. And no doubt about that. I think what the new technologies do is accelerate previous problems. What I tried to do to, you think about, you're going to write a book on this now. How are you going to make sense out of this mess with this history, with teachers sort of being lost and increasingly unable to teach wisdom because wisdom has perspective and you're not supposed to teach perspective and so on. I decided that we really have to get back to virtue. And in the Christian tradition, virtue means the character of people, the kinds of people that we are. It's not just doing what's right. It's being the right kind of person. And there have been a number of books published in the last 15 years, Bill Bennett and others, trying to get virtue back into our conversations. And I think particularly now in the information age, we need to revisit virtue. So chapter by chapter, I say, here are the kinds of virtues that in an information age we need to consider very seriously, even if it's not politically correct or whatever. So discernment, for example, is one. Moderation in terms of bandwidth and all. Wisdom. I've got a chapter on authenticity, which I think may be the most important virtue that we have to revisit. That is to say, to mean what we say and say what we mean. To be with people the same kind of person that we really are. What the cyber world does is give everybody an opportunity to be a fraud, to put up a website that creates a certain image of who we are that's different from who we are, or to take on a handle in instant messaging, a name, and pretend that we're somebody. These are technologies of deception. Look at what's happening with WorldCom and Anderson Consulting and Enron and all right now. All this corporate fraud, it's really database deception. It used to be we'd talk about cooking the books. Well, you don't have to go to the books now. You just go to the database, and you move a few things around. What was once contributed to a loss now contributes to a profit, and bam, you're profitable. $3 billion difference with the click of a mouse. I mean, this is fraudulent stuff. It's inauthenticity of the worst kind. So the virtue of authenticity is incredibly important. But I think none of these kinds of virtues can be easily nurtured unless we have solid communities, including church communities.
Now, there are people who are calling from within the church for the church to get with it and get online. There are people who are now talking about a cyber church, and in some cases, a church that may even, I'm thinking about the 70 the 700,000 member church in South Korea, Seoul, South Korea, where the pastor has recently been quoted in saying, the head pastor, that virtually everything that his people need can be had online, and that's where he hopes to move it and thereby to grow his church to even greater numbers online. When we come back, we'll find out what our guest, Dr. Quentin Schultz, makes of the so-called coming cyber church. If this isn't conducive to community, it's difficult to see how all this information technology can ultimately be conducive to communion, which is what the church is. Our phone number, 1-800-730-2727. Or are there ways that the church can use this without going whole hog into the cyber church? 1-800-730-2727. That's 1-800-730-2727. When we come back, 10 more minutes with Dr. Quentin Schultz on Christians in a high-tech culture.
You're listening to Issues Etc. on the Jubilee Network.
There are things for which an uncompromising stand is worthwhile. These words were written in 1935 in Nazi Germany. The man who wrote them was Pastor Dietrich Bonhoeffer. While many Christians remained silent during the rise and reign of National Socialism in Germany, why did Bonhoeffer speak out? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July is Till the Night Be Past, The Life and Times of Dietrich Bonhoeffer. You can order Till the Night Be Past online at issuesetc.org. Under the What's New section, you'll find information on this book. Or call Concordia Publishing House weekdays during regular business hours at 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, or issuesetc.org. Find out why the life of Dietrich Bonhoeffer still impacts Christians today. If you have a question or a comment on Christians in a high-tech culture, you can give us a call at 1-800-730-2727. That's 1-800-730-2727. Dr. Quentin Schultz is our guest. He's professor of communication arts and sciences at Calvin College in Grand Rapids, Michigan, author of the new book, Habits of the High-Tech Heart, Living Virtuously in an Information Age. Dr. Schultz, what do you make of the so-called cyber church?
I think it's folly. Pure folly. I think, as I try to argue in chapter 7 on community, that we're made by God to live primarily in geographic proximity with other people, with a community in the flesh, so to speak. And that's where the deepest relationships are, where we can cultivate things like trust, where we can really get to know people and nurture them, particularly young people. It's, of course, what has been the basis for congregational life, coming together for worship, for prayer, for the sacraments and all. I once got an email, Todd, from a guy asking me how to do the sacraments online. And I thought, he's sort of missing the point here. We tend to look at new media and think that they're going to replace all previous media. They're the answer. And then we get into trouble, and we have to say that as history goes on and the creation unfolds, that there are new media, but we have to figure out what's appropriate for them. And I don't think cyber church is an appropriate way of talking about real the body of believers. Now, if you're talking about just getting information out or giving people access to Bible study materials or other things, there's a wonderful site my colleagues at Calvin has online called Christian Classics Ethereal Library, where he's taken all kinds of Christian classics that are no longer copyrighted and put them online for people.
That's by way of, you know, resource. And by
right.
Golly, I use the internet and the World Wide Web as a resource every single day. It's part and parcel of the work that I do, partly because I simply do not have enough hands to go through as many newspapers as I have to peruse in preparation for a radio 3-hour radio program. But you're saying the real danger here is that we would misuse it for purposes that it simply cannot serve?
Yeah, it's inappropriate. It doesn't fit right. It's not that cyberspace is inherently evil or bad at all, but it's a good medium, I think, primarily for getting information by, for accomplishing little instrumental tasks like setting up an interview with somebody or going to a website that has information on arthritic joints and what are the latest procedures, you know. So if we look at it as an informational medium, I think, and leave it primarily at that, we'll see the value. When we start to think of it as a relational medium, where we're going to develop deep relationships with people or with God and all, then I think we start getting into folly.
I had a pastor friend once who used to tell the story about too few hymns in the hymn books in the pews. And he would get routine complaints from his congregation. We don't have enough hymn books for everyone to have one. He said that's exactly the way it ought to be because it forces you to share. Then you have to actually stand next to each other when you sing. And he said that's what we're here for. So maybe too few hymn books. Are we seeing here maybe if the church steps into its, tries to become the cyber church, it'll be a case of too many hymn books? People will be able to stand in their own basements or in their own computer rooms and never leave their home.
Yeah, in fact, I once said that it will reach a point where everybody can just have their own religion. You can have your own website and call it the church or whatever you want, and there are thousands of people that have those out there now. They just create their own religion. Religion of, by, and for me. You know, well, what is that all about? That doesn't have anything to do with what the church as a body of believers is meant to be. My wife and I recently spent some time going through the Gospel of John, which is my favorite gospel, and I was struck in there again by, in John 15, the idea of friendship. The friend is someone who's willing to lay down their life for another. That depth of commitment to another and relationship, it's giving up for another. And where do you get those kinds of relationships? You don't get relationships like that online. That's in John 15, of course, in the context of the fact that God the Father sacrificed his own son for us. Where do we find the best examples of people who are serving others, sacrificing self on behalf of others, what the church is all about? I think you find that in person. You find it in people that are locally going to visit the sick. And you find it in people coming together for worship and praying for one another. You don't find it in these, what we called earlier, kind of promiscuous relationships in cyberspace.
Let's talk with Richard. He's also on the phone. Richard, welcome to the program.
Hi, Todd. This is Richard Moore, pastor.
Yes.
I have no problem, really, with what you're saying about relationships and all of that, but then we really should do away with the radio, shouldn't we? Because don't we broadcast worship services over the radio so that shut-ins can hear them? Don't we use that as a medium by which we invite people to be part of an interactive Bible study? Don't we use that for things like Issues, etc.? Why can't the Internet be used the same way? Not instead of church, but as a supplement to make it yet another way that we can get the gospel to the person who 3 o'clock in the morning goes surfing through the net, looking for something. They don't know what.
All right, let's see what Dr. Schultz has to say. Dr. Schultz?
Hey, Richard, I agree with you on that. I would put that in the virtue of moderation in the sense that we say, okay, now here is a valid role for the Internet in getting the gospel out and providing religious resources and so forth. That's wonderful. In fact, I've been part of those kinds of efforts very, very much since 1994, co-founded the biggest religious, and it's a Christian website, the most popular one in the world, the Gospel Communications Network, about 10 million hits a day right now. That includes the Bible Gateway that a lot of people use to search the scriptures. So I'm all in favor of that. But as you said, Richard, rightly so, I think the thing there is this, in this idea of moderation as virtue, it's not to let us get excessively involved in this medium where we think it's the answer for everything and can replace the local church.
Right, and I don't think anyone intended to say, either you or I intended to say, that the church can't utilize it. In fact, I think we specifically said the church ought to be utilizing it by way of resource as much as we can, but for it to change the nature of the church or to substitute for what the church is properly called to do is a misuse of the technology. As we end our conversation then, Dr. Schultz, what is the solution to this? Is it just unplugging the thing for a while? Is it shutting off the power? We've got about 2 minutes.
Great, 2 minutes for the solutions. Todd, you're a real buddy. Well, I think, obviously, I believe that the virtue is important, and we need to cultivate virtue, cultivate wisdom and moderation and discernment and authenticity and so forth. And the question is, how do we do that? And I think we do that through local relational activities. We do it in our families by spending time at meals together without technologies coming in. We do it by spending time on vacations together. We do it by being very much part of a local church where we can model virtue to one another, admonish one another, encourage each other to live faithfully. So we need to look for those relational opportunities which cut against the technology. And I'll just divide this into four quick areas. I think we've got the relational activities that have to do with friendship that are crucial, cultivating friendships. We've got hospitality, which means especially reaching out to strangers, people who are different than us. We've got neighborliness, which doesn't mean just having neighbors nearby and talking to them or whatever, but in the biblical sense, the neighbor is the person in need that we reach out to help simply because they're in need and they're a human being, just like the Good Samaritan, not because we're like that other person or we even like that person. And finally is leisure, in which I include worship and Sabbath keeping, and prayer and meditation on God's Word and so forth as well. So these are non-technological activities that we need to invest time into and become wise in how we do them to offset the ravages of technology.
Dr. Quentin Schultz, thank you very much for being our guest.
Todd, this is a pleasure. Great to talk with you and to be on this program again, and blessings to your listeners.
Folks, the book is called Habits of the Heart, Living Virtuously in an Information Age. If you'd like to purchase a cassette copy of this program for $6.50, or if you'd like to receive Dr. Quentin Schultz's new book, Habits of the Heart, for $23, or if you'd like to make a donation to Issues, Etc., our resource line, 1-800-737-0172, our address, Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. That's Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. You know, I think it all has to do, in the end, with admitting to the limits of what we can do technologically in a fallen world. And that's why I'd say, folks, don't let it suffice that you simply listen to an hour of this program about this book. Buy the book and read it for a change. Read it, because we've only scratched the surface. To admit the limits of what we can do in this fallen world with our inventions, our technologies, and to admit the dangers that those inventions and technologies may invite into our lives. That's part of the point. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening to Issues, Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues, Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri, 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues, Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.